That invocation to Savitri, that radiance, is very appropriate to what we'll be reading tonight because we'll conclude this chapter, number 22 in the Yoga of Integral Knowledge, Vijnana or Gnosis. Sri Aurobindo had alluded to a consciousness which is aware of all times in a sort of contained memory, not simply of the past, but a knowledge of the present and the future too, all of it in an eternal moment. So we begin from that point. For while the reason proceeds from moment to moment of time, and loses and acquires, and again loses and again acquires, the gnosis dominates time in a one view and perpetual power, and links past, present, and future in their indivisible connections in a single continuous map of knowledge, side by side. So view, so sight, power, knowledge, force, the two aspects which move from the expressive nature of chit shakti, coming into this vision of the supramental. The gnosis starts from the totality which it immediately possesses. It sees parts, groups, and details only in relation to the totality and in one vision with it. The mental reason cannot really see the totality at all and does not know fully any whole except by starting from an analysis and synthesis of its parts, masses, and details. Otherwise, its whole view is always a vague apprehension or an imperfect comprehension or a confused summary of indistinct features. This is so rich and so interesting. We live in an individualistic age, and everything is premised on the power of the individual. But for Sri Aurobindo, the truth of the individual is always contextual, it's always part of the whole. Even John Donne knew that. No man is an island entire unto itself. Every man is a piece of a continent, part of the whole, something like that. But the idea that for us to arrive at anything like a comprehensive view, we have to first apprehend and then see if we can comprehend. If you remember when we were reading in The Life Divine, his description of the nature of the supramental consciousness, it has both a comprehending and an apprehending aspect. But all of it, not having to station them next to each other, but they are spontaneously operative within its vast vision. For the mind, we derive what powers we have from that suprarational source above, but here they are separate. They may become contiguous if we work strenuously. We try to analyze and detect this truth. We try to bring it alongside and pair it with another truth, see if they fit. And so we go building our knowledge. But for the supramental, for the Gnostic vision, it is seen all at once, in its entirety, and there is no individual that exists outside of the entirety. The individual is part of a larger truth, a transcendence which becomes vast and becomes minute. But the minute is always contextualized, is it not, inside the all. So no individual has a right to insist on that stance versus the stance of the whole. We live in a communitarian cosmos, as it were. The reason deals with constituents and processes and properties. It tries in vain to form by them an idea of the thing in itself, its reality, its essence. But the gnosis sees the thing in itself first, penetrates to its original and eternal nature, adjoins its processes and properties only as a self-expression of its nature. So we see here the essence. So the essential, the holistic, the entirety. The reason dwells in the diversity and is its prisoner. It deals with things separately and treats each as a separate existence, as it deals with sections of time and divisions of space. It sees unity only in a sum, or by elimination of diversity, or as a general conception and a vacant figure. But the gnosis dwells in the unity and knows by it all the nature of the diversities. It starts from the unity and sees diversities only of a unity, not diversities constituting the one, but a unity constituting its own multitudes. So we have an essential reality. We have the power of that to station itself as the whole, and the operative sense of it is that it is one. It is a unity. No separation exists. He continues. The Gnostic knowledge, the Gnostic sense, does not recognize any real division. This is Advaita, is it not? There are not two realities. There's one reality. And this one reality, which is a unity, establishes its own multitudes. Let's read it again. The Gnostic knowledge, the Gnostic sense, so the knowledge and the touching of it, so the palpability of what it knows, it touches. The Gnostic sense does not recognize any real division. There's no separation, no gap that has to be closed. It does not treat things separately as if they were independent of their true and original oneness. The oneness never evaporates. There's no need for a bridge to be built across a chasm. There is no chasm. The reason deals with the finite and is helpless before the infinite. It can conceive of it as an indefinite extension in which the finite acts, but the infinite in itself, it can deal with difficulty. It can with difficulty conceive and cannot at all grasp or penetrate. So even when we think about an infinite, we think of it in terms of a spatial representation, an indefinite extension in which the minute, the finite acts. But the gnosis is, sees, and lives in the infinite. It starts always from the infinite and knows finite things only in their relation to the infinite and in the sense of the infinite. So there's an essential reality which expresses itself as an infinite. That infinite is the whole of being. It is the all. And the individual lives within the all. And what is the nature of its life? This all expressing infinitely the essence of being? Unity. Fundamental oneness. If we would describe the gnosis as it is in its own awareness, not thus imperfectly as it is to us in contrast with our own reason and intelligence, it is hardly possible to speak of it except in figures and symbols. And so here he's going to move to the Vedic and the Vedantic imagery. And first we must remember that the Gnostic level, Mahat, remember that means vast, Vijnana, which means the distribution of knowledge, is not the supreme plane of our consciousness, but a middle or link plane. So even this is not the supreme, it may be the supreme word, but what is it that pre-exists? What is it that is beyond the supramental? Interposed between the triune glory of the utter spirit, the infinite existence, consciousness, and bliss of the eternal, and our lower triple being in nature, it is as if it stood there as the mediating, formulated, organizing, and creative wisdom, power, and joy of the eternal. In the gnosis, Satchit Ananda gathers up the light of his unseizable existence and pours it out on the soul in the shape and power of a divine knowledge, a divine will, and a divine bliss of existence. So, again, he began the paragraph, if we want to understand it in our own awareness. So here we're working within the framework of the individual. So here, Satchit Ananda, seen as a divine personality. And remember, that's where Satchit Ananda gets its first mention, is in devotional Vedanta, theistic Vedanta, definitely referring to an existent whose nature is delight. Whether the name was masculine or whether the name was feminine. So here, poured into the experience of the individual is this mediating consciousness of the supramental, the Gnostic, which translates Satchit Ananda to the experience of the rapt soul. It is as if infinite light were gathered up into the compact orb of the sun, and lavished on all that depends upon the sun in radiances that continue forever. So first, the experience of light, unwalled light, immeasurable light. But the gnosis is not only light, it is force, because the supramental expresses chit shakti. Sat Chit Ananda. Chit is never just sheer consciousness. It is always instinct filled with power. To know is to do. To see is to form. But the gnosis is not only light, it is force. It is creative knowledge. It is the self-effective truth of the divine idea. This idea is not creative imagination, not something that constructs in a void, but light and power of eternal substance, truth light, full of truth force, and it brings out what is latent in being. It does not create a fiction that never was in being. Let's back up a moment. It is a self-effective truth. This is the idea of ritam in the Rig Veda. The idea that truth orders itself. And what it brings, what it fashions, what it establishes, what it shows is perfect, balanced, harmonic, creative. But it's not, as he says, creative imagination. Now, this is a reference which one could easily skip over. This is goes back to Thomistic thinking in the Catholic Church. The idea, creative imagination, not something that constructs in a void, because there's the old argument as to whether or not the soul comes into being from some pre-existent thing, as an origen, or is created out of nothing. And that is something that Thomas Aquinas preferred, and many other philosophers and theologians as well. This is not Sri Aurobindo's idea, and so he says this idea is not creative imagination. It's not something that constructs in a void. Nothing is coming out of a void. There is no void. Shunya seems to be, but is actually simply the dark side of Brahman. It's Brahman holding its infinity within, not expressed. What seems to be asat is not absolute non-being, according to Sri Aurobindo. It is that which is beyond being, that transcends even the positive station of sat in Satchit Ananda. But this idea, this supramental representation of Satchit Ananda, is not void. It's light and power of eternal substance full of sat, truth light, full of truth force, full of shakti and chit. And it brings out what is latent in being. In other words, here's the true maya. This is the measuring out of the conscious force of the divine. She is measuring herself out, taking from the infinite this and impressing the infinite into the richness of a form that is finite. The form, very small to her, is the entirety of the cosmos to us. It does not create a fiction that never was in being. This is not a cheat. Maya is powerfully skillful and wizard-like and wonderful, but she is not nihilistic, and she is not, to your dismay, your enemy. She is your mother. The ideation of the gnosis is radiating light stuff of the consciousness of the eternal existence. Each ray is a truth. Each one of us coming out of that sun is a truth. The will in the gnosis is a conscious force of eternal knowledge. It is coming out of chit shakti. It throws the consciousness and substance of being, the chit and the sat, into infallible forms of truth power, forms that embody the idea and make it faultlessly effective. And it works out each truth power and each truth form spontaneously and rightly according to its nature. Back to the idea of ritam. This, of course, is all in that Gnostic realm, that vast light of the supramental. Because it carries this creative force of the divine idea, the sun, the Lord and symbol of the Gnosis, is described in the Veda as the light which is the father of all things, Surya Savitri, the wisdom luminous, who is the bringer out into manifest existence. Now, Surya Savitri, this was translated by Sri Aurobindo from Rig Veda, Mandala 5, hymn 81, and he referred to this as sort of a rendering, a poetic rendering, but we can just briefly read these five verses in this in English. Surya Savitri, creator and increaser. Men illumined yoke their mind, and they yoke their thoughts to him who is illumination and largeness and clear perceiving. Knowing all phenomena, he orders soul, the energies of the sacrifice. Vast is the affirmation in all things of Savitri, the divine creator. All forms he takes unto himself, the seer, and he creates from them good for the twofold existence and the fourfold. The creator, the supreme good, manifests heaven wholly, and his light pervades all as he follows the march of the dawn. In the wake of his march, the other gods also reach by his force to the greatness of the divinity. He has mapped out the realms of earthly light by his mightiness, the brilliant one, the divine creator. And thou reachest, O Savitri, to the three luminous heavens, and thou art utterly expressed by the rays of the sun, and thou encompassest the night upon either side, and thou becomest, by the law of thy actions, the Lord of love, O God. And thou art powerful for every creation, and thou becomest the increaser, O God, by thy movings, and thou illuminest utterly all this world of becomings. Shiavaswa has attained to the affirmation of thee, O Savitri. It's quite beautiful in the English, and it's wondrous in the Sanskrit as well. Now, there is also, of course, the daughter of Surya Savitri. That would be Surya Savitri. And you can go to Rigveda 10, hymn 85, and read especially verses 9 and 13. She is the daughter of the sun, brings that felicity and that wheel to the waiting earth. And of course, Sri Aurobindo is writing this originally in 1917 and then revising in 1932, we guess. And an epic is underway about this same Savitri, the goddess of the dawn. Wisdom luminous. Back to his paragraph here. This creation is inspired by the divine delight, the eternal ananda. It is full of the joy of its own truth and power. It creates in bliss, creates out of bliss, creates that which is blissful. This goes back to the Taittiriya Upanishad clearly. So he has spoken about the truth of being as light. He's spoken about the will, the power that knowledge has to enforce itself. And now he speaks about delight. So Satchit Ananda, all through. Therefore, the world of the gnosis, the supramental world, is the true and the happy creation, Ritam, Bhadram, since all in it shares in the perfect joy that made it. So Ritam again is the right. Capital RIGHT, it's the right. It's the truth of self-regulated divine being. Bhadram means the good, the happy. It's the natural state of how this free, illimitable, conscious existence experiences itself. Without borders, without limit, without conflict, all to it is enjoyment, is delightful. A divine radiance of undeviating knowledge, a divine power of unfaltering will, and a divine ease of unstumbling bliss are the nature or prakriti of the soul in supermind, in vijnana. So he's describing here a fundamentally different relationship between soul and nature, purusha and prakriti, than that which we're aware of or experience here, working in this world. There, purusha and prakriti are absolute complements of each other. They are identical. Simply the two poles of a single existence. That's all. Here, a different story gets told. But you can see knowledge, power, bliss, all expressive of Satchit Ananda, is the task that the supramental takes upon itself so that it can manifest what is infinite in Satchit Ananda. The supramental is at the service of Satchit Ananda. The stuff of the Gnostic or supramental plane is made of the perfect absolutes of all that is here imperfect and relative, and its movement of the reconciled interlockings and happy fusions of all that here are opposites. For behind the appearance of these opposites are their truths, and the truths of the eternal are not in conflict with each other. Our minds and life's opposites, transformed in the supermind into their own true spirit, link together and are seen as tones and colorings of an eternal reality and everlasting Ananda. Supermind, or gnosis, is the supreme truth, the supreme thought, the supreme word, the supreme sight, the supreme will idea. It is the inner and outer extension of the infinite who is beyond space, the unfettered time of the eternal who is timeless, the supernal harmony of all absolutes of the absolute. So this large comprehensive power of knowledge and oneness distributed in tones of delight everywhere reminds one of something else that Mother and Sri Aurobindo like to toss back and forth like a ball between each other. The opposite of a truth is not a falsehood, but another truth. To the envisaging mind, there are three powers of the vijnana. Its supreme power knows and receives into it from above all the infinite existence, consciousness, and bliss of the Ishvara. It is, in its highest height, the absolute knowledge and force of eternal Satchit Ananda. So Sri Aurobindo has identified here the divine as a person who is the Supreme Lord and is the expressive power of Satchit Ananda. Its supreme power is to be this conscious reservoir. Its second power concentrates the infinite into a dense, luminous consciousness, Chaitanya Ghana or Chid Ghana. The seed state of the divine consciousness in which are contained living and concrete all the immutable principles of the divine being, and all the inviolable truths of the divine conscious idea and nature. So this huge infinite, limitless infinite, deliberately concentrates itself. This is an empowering tapas that brings it together, forces it together. And it is bristling, it is brimming with all the inherent principles of conscious existence, which will articulate itself. This is gathering, ready to come into being. Its third power brings or looses out these things by the effective ideation, vision, authentic identities of the divine knowledge, movement of the divine will force, vibration of the divine delight intensities into a universal harmony, an illimitable diversity, a manifold rhythm of their powers forms an interplay of living consequences. So here is its cosmogonic power. It's a reservoir. It concentrates itself. It's preliminary. And now it pours it all out without resistance. This is a perfect creation, a perfect manifestation. All comes dancing into being. Nothing is awry. There is no note of disharmony. The mental Purusha, rising into the Vijnana Maya, must ascend into these three powers. Remember, he is talking about this as if he's saying, what does it mean for us? What would this experience be like? And so here, he has set out the template, all these things that we must become to live in the supramental light. We have to become large, to become one with that compressed conscious power of the divine, that is the effortful nature of chit tapas, chit shakti. And we have to see it come brought into expression, ritam, but also ananda. It is ananda which is the creative force, as the Upanishad sees it. It must turn by conversion of its movements into the movements of the gnosis, its mental perception, ideation, will, pleasure, into radiances of the divine knowledge, pulsations of the divine will force, waves and floods of the divine delight seas. It must convert its conscious stuff of mental nature into the chidgana, or dense self-luminous consciousness. So a conversion of being, a surrendering of the lower limitations and a rising to the higher nature, a restoration of the true nature into the embodied being. Finally, it must transform its conscious substance into a Gnostic self or truth self of infinite Satchitananda. These three movements are described in the Isha Upanishad. The first is Vyuha, the marshalling of the rays of the sun of Gnosis in the order of the truth consciousness. The second as Samuha, the gathering together of the rays into the body of the sun of Gnosis. The third as the vision of that sun's fairest form of all, in which the soul most intimately possesses its oneness with the infinite Purusha. So, Vyuha means arrangement, or distribution. Samuha means collection, gathering, bringing together. Sri Aurobindo has a footnote here. Let me see if my eyes can read this tiny print. This, by the way, is from Isha Upanishad. This is verse 16. Surya Rashmin Vyuha Samuha Tejo Yate Kalyanatmanam Rupam Tate Pasyame Yo Sav Asao Purusha Soham Asmi. And again, Vyuha is the marshalling, Samuha is the gathering together. Pasyami, that is the seeing. I see. It is a convincing sight. It's not just I see or I see. No, it's I see. One is sure. It's veridical. Before I read the rest of his footnote, let's read his translation of this, which was in the very first issue of the Arya, published on his birthday, on 15 August 1914. It reads, O fosterer, O soul seer, O ordainer, O illumining sun, O power of the father of creatures, marshal thy rays, draw together thy light, the luster, which is thy most blessed form of all, that in thee I behold. The Purusha, there and there, he am I. My own view is that this publication of the initial issue of the Arya is miraculous. It is a miracle. I have never in my life ever read anything in which page after page after page is an utter revelation in powerful rhythms. That first issue of the Arya, in which the life divine, the synthesis of yoga, his study of the Isha are launched. It is staggering. If he had written only those first 64 pages with minor collaboration from his co-editors, he would have stood as a world genius just from that. Let's finish his footnote. The Veda describes the Vijnana plane as Ritam Satyam Brahat, the right, truth, vast, the same triple idea differently expressed. Ritam is the action of the divine knowledge, will, and joy in the lines of the truth, the play of the truth consciousness. Satyam is the truth of being which so acts, the dynamic essence of the truth consciousness. Brahat is the infinity of Satchit Ananda, out of which the other two proceed and in which they are founded. The Supreme Above, in him, around, everywhere, and the soul dwelling in the Supreme and one with it, the infinite power and truth of the divine concentrated in his own concentrated luminous soul nature, a radiant activity of the divine knowledge, will, and joy, perfect in the natural action of the Prakriti. This is the fundamental experience of the mental being transformed and fulfilled and sublimated in the perfection of the gnosis. We come to the end of the chapter. And next, we'll take up the conditions for the attainment of the gnosis. That will be chapter 23. So, what to read from Savitri tonight? Book 3. The Book of the Divine Mother. Canto 2. The Adoration of the Divine Mother. And let's begin at the beginning of the canto. A stillness absolute, incommunicable, meets the sheer self-discovery of the soul. A wall of stillness shuts it from the world. A gulf of stillness swallows up the sense and makes unreal all that mind has known, all that the laboring senses still would weave, prolonging an imaged unreality. Self's vast spiritual silence occupies space. Only the inconceivable is left, only the nameless without space and time. Abolished is the burdening need of life. Thought falls from us, we cease from joy and grief. The ego is dead. We are freed from being and care. We have done with birth and death and work and fate. O soul, it is too early to rejoice. Thou hast reached the boundless silence of the self. Thou hast leaped into a glad divine abyss. But where hast thou thrown self's mission and self's power? On what dead bank on the eternal's road? One was within thee who was self and world. What hast thou done for his purpose in the stars? Escape brings not the victory and the crown. Something thou camest to do from the unknown. But nothing is finished, and the world goes on because only half God's cosmic work is done. Only the everlasting No has neared and stared into thy eyes and killed thy heart. But where is the lover's everlasting Yes and immortality in the secret heart? The voice that chants to the Creator fire, the symboled Om, the great assenting word, the bridge between the rapture and the calm, the passion and the beauty of the bride, the chamber where the glorious enemies kiss, the smile that saves, the golden peak of things. This too is truth at the mystic fount of life. A black veil has been lifted. We have seen the mighty shadow of the omniscient Lord. But who has lifted up the veil of light, and who has seen the body of the King? The mystery of God's birth and acts remains, leaving unbroken the last chapter's seal, unsolved the riddle of the unfinished play. The cosmic player laughs within his mask, and still the last inviolate secret hides behind the human glory of a form, behind the gold eidolon of a name. A large white line has figured as a goal, but far beyond the ineffable sun track's blaze. What seemed the source and end was a wide gate, a last bare step into eternity. An eye has opened upon timelessness. Infinity takes back the forms it gave. And through God's darkness or his naked light, his million rays return into the sun. There is a zero sign of the supreme. Nature left nude and still uncovers God. But in her grandiose nothingness, all is there. When her strong garbs are torn away from us, the soul's ignorance is slain, but not the soul. The zero covers an immortal face. A high and blank negation is not all. A huge extinction is not God's last word. Life's ultimate sense, the close of being's course, the meaning of this great mysterious world. In absolute silence sleeps an absolute power. Awaking, it can wake the trance-bound soul, and in the ray reveal the parent sun. It can make the world a vessel of spirit's force. It can fashion in the clay God's perfect shape. To free the self is but one radiant pace. Here to fulfill himself was God's desire. Om Tatastu. Namaste, Jai Ma.